You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome back to Earth Station Trek, a show where we trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between. I'm Charles Kelso, and it's my pleasure to introduce the rest of the Earth Station Trek crew, Keith Johnson.
Hello, all.
Alan Seiler.
How's it going?
And Veronica Daschle.
What up?
And we have some pretty big Star Trek news to talk about this week. The crew of the Enterprise, they've announced several regular actors filling out the cast of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. So we're first off going to be diving into these guys. Everyone get a chance to see this, the casting news that came out this week?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was reading it online. It was quite interesting. And I was surprised, or it was interesting. So many came out. Like, what, four or five people was it?
Yeah, five of them, which gives us with the three we already have, gets us a nice rounded eight main cast members.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I like the number eight.
Do you?
I do. It's my favorite number.
Interesting.
She's not making that up.
No, I'm sure really not.
I guess first off, anyone who jumped out at you, who's familiar from anywhere else, or caught your attention?
I don't recognize any of these kids.
What about Lorna Bucket from Doctor Who? From A Good Man Goes to War.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I hated that episode. So I really kind of blocked it out of my mind. But yeah. I do remember now. Somebody had mentioned that. And I do remember. But yeah.
Well, a couple of them have sort of sci-fi cred. I guess we'll start with Christina Chong, who, you said, she played Lorna Bucket in A Good Man Goes to War in Doctor Who. Yeah. She's been in Black Mirror. She was in the episode The Waldo Moment. Looks like she's done a few other things. She was in Halo Nightfall.
Oh.
I guess that's all about her so far.
Yep, that's it.
Then we've got Babs Olusunmokun. Hopefully I'm getting that right. He was an actor who was in Black Mirror, and he's going to be in the upcoming Dune movie.
Oh, that's right. I knew that name looked familiar. Oh, yeah. Oh, and I'm so excited for the Dune movie.
Yeah, he was also in The Defenders in 2017 and the recent remake of Roots.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's interesting.
So he's been around. He's got some cred.
Yeah, and it looks like he's fluent in English, Portuguese, French, and Yoruba, and he's a third-degree Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt.
Wow. Interesting.
So he can do his own stunts.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did it say what his role is in the series?
It doesn't. We're going to get to that.
No, we don't know any of these people's roles.
They haven't announced any of their roles. They're really just, they're here.
You know, they haven't actually officially announced character names or anything yet.
Right. That's correct.
Right. We have the inside scoop.
Yeah, we've got some.
You'll hear it here rumors. First. You'll hear all the best rumors right here.
And you've got Celia Rose Gooding, who was... She's an American actress and singer, and she recently won a Grammy Award. And she was in the Grammy Award-winning musical Jagged Little Pill.
Yes, I saw that, and I was really excited about that. I'm a big Alanis Morissette fan and was really excited to see the connection to that in our Star Trek crew.
Yeah, I saw the name Jagged Little Pill. I didn't even think about Alanis Morissette.
Uh-huh, yep.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was thinking they did a musical about a 90s song. I was very confused.
It's interesting too, because I'm looking at her IMDb. This is the only acting credit on it. She has done, I mean, because most of her stuff is stage.
Yeah.
So she has done, she has appeared in things in, like, you know, a talking head capacity, like Broadway Profiles, which was a documentary series. So this is her only film acting credit, which I think is really, really exciting. And awesome. In the little, you know, they did the video where each one of them sort of like recites part of the opening spiel from Star Trek. And then each one of them kind of says a little bit about their experience filming. And it was such a cute video, so sweet, but there was something about her that I just latched onto. Like, she just has this sort of radiance about her. And I'm super excited to see what she brings to the show.
Well, they've had good luck so far in the new Star Treks with theater actors.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And that's
very true.
All right. So then we've got Jess Bush, who was Australia's, she was on Australia's Next Top Model back in 2011. And then made her first television appearances were on the Australian, I think it's a soap opera called Home and Away that's been running for years. Mm-hmm. And she's had a few others. So it looks like she's coming from Australia.
Mm-hmm. And she's the one that in the, when the first picture that they released of her, and it's really just that picture, because I've seen other pictures now and there's not much of a resemblance, but the one that they attached to the press release immediately made me think of Tasha Yar.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the hair helps a lot with
the
that.
Hair, the sort of elfin features.
Yeah. I can
and
see
I
that.
Thought, oh, maybe a forebear, but I'm sure that's not the direction they're going. It was just me being silly, but
yeah.
Such an interesting resemblance.
That's the sort of thing you'd see in a fan film. It would be
like, right.
You know, like Cindy Yar.
Exactly.
I mean, like another Yar, like her sister, and now yet another one.
Yeah, like her great grandmother was on the Enterprise. Oh,
that's a different time period.
This is not a scoop, folks.
No, Cindy Yar. No. I like that. I like that name, Cindy Yar.
And then you have Melissa Navia, who is an actress originally from Colombia, actress, writer, and stand-up comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like she was introduced to the world of stage at the age of 10 and studied musical theater.
Another stage actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I keep seeing people online who keep saying, oh, we should have a Star Trek musical episode. If they're stacking the casting deck in order to pull that off, I am out. Check me out. That's it.
I wouldn't mind it. That'd be a great short trek. Would be
maybe a short trek. Musical. I'd be okay with that.
Well, I could definitely see a musical on Lower Decks. I think it has the tone where it could pull something.
Well, that's a much better idea. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Then that, because it'd be easier to do, because like with Buffy, it was the demon that was having them sing all the time, and it could be an alien or some kind of.
Or you just have a problem with the universal translator.
Yeah.
They're dealing with a lyrical musical species.
Right. Or it could be a wonderful holotech malfunction.
I think generally though that I think stage actors I think it's a good skill to have coming to Star Trek. Because you have particularly Star Trek as it was, it's very theater based. You know, it's very here's the stage and you got the script and you got a lot of times, especially on old Star Trek, you could have two actors in a room having to bring the drama.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's a good discipline to have. And I mean, Shatner was a stage actor before he went into television.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we think of them as a bunch? Any thoughts?
Well, again, I go back to that that introductory video that they released, and I think that they all just, I love them. I'm already bought into this whole thing.
Yeah. I think that it seems like a very international cast.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
From England, from Australia, from, you know, originally from Colombia, from Nigeria, you know, which is what Star Trek should be. You know, it's. You know, the human race going out into the stars.
Absolutely. Right. Well, human race and whoever else these people might be playing.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Because we have hints that maybe they're not all of human descent.
That is true.
Which, you know, is a little bit, you know, it's interesting because when you go back to TOS, it was a completely human crew except for that one guy with the pointy ears.
Right.
And so it's interesting that we have this, which predates that. And it seems like it's going to be, it's got the multiracial aspect that the original series had, but it looks like it might be having some more like alien presence, which I'm always excited about.
Yeah. Which they've done on Discovery as well, where you have just, you know, aliens just populating the
aliens
background.
And robot people and all kinds of crazy
Daft
stuff.
Daft Punk is in there.
Right.
You know, anybody could be in there. Now, what we keep sort of teasing, back in November, a website called The Illuminati claimed that they had gotten a hold of the casting breakdown for the regular characters that would be appearing on Strange New Worlds. And now the way these things go, I mean, you know, I mean, I know that like the Picard casting breakdown came out before the episode did, and there were changes. You know, Elnor had a different name, and I think Rios had a different name. But other side from that, it was pretty spot on. But with the internet being what it is, you know, you have to sort of take these things with a grain of salt. You know what I mean? Like, is it somebody got some information, or is it somebody got bored one Saturday afternoon and came up with it, you know?
Yeah, but if they came up with it, you know, what they came up with really seems to match the casting that we've gotten.
Yeah, that's why I thought we should go ahead and talk about it here, because, I mean, when I saw that group of actors, my first thought was like, that just matches the casting breakdown.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like person for person, it matches the descriptions in that casting breakdown. So I thought we would go through that and do some speculating as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a little bit out of order here because I sort of chopped it up and put it with who I thought the actors might be. So an actor that was listed on this casting breakdown, the name they have is Biodun, which I suspect is a code name, but we'll get to that. It's in the description states that he's a close advisor to Captain Pike, has an air of easy erudition, is male, black, in his 40s, and curiously from the original series.
From the original series.
Right. And now we all know there was no actor named Biodun in the no character named Biodun in the original series.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like M'Benga.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking too.
That they could be you'd expect, you know, going to the Captain Pike series, that Dr. Boyce would be his close advisor.
Yeah.
Right. But we've had no mention of Dr. Boyce or an actor who even seemed like he could be playing him. Now, I guess he could always still turn up. But, you know, I think that going into the show, not necessarily a problem, but something they have to be concerned about is that, you know, your main lead three actors are all white people.
Yeah.
You know, it's as a product of that 60s casting where the cage was primarily white folks. And then they made it more diverse when they went to series.
Exactly.
But I think that it'd be an interesting choice to develop M'Benga and sort of slot him into the Boyce role. What would we think of that?
That would be interesting, especially because he interned on Vulcan.
Right.
So that means he would have a completely different mindset. Just like Michael Burnham, since she was raised on Vulcan, he would have a different mindset. He would have a different skill set. That could be very interesting to have him as a almost an outsider character. He could have a different viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we have to remember that this show is set quite a, you know, number of years before the original series. So there's plenty of time to have him as a main character, have him transfer to wherever he ends up later, and have the Boyce character come in. So we could see that change of main cast during the time that this show runs.
Yeah. Now, we don't know for sure when this is set, whether it's after... Right. You know, after before the cage, or it could be after, you know, they appeared on Discovery, which, I mean, either way, I mean, Boyce was an old man then. I mean, it's easy to write that character out. He retired.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you want to drop by and have a Boyce episode, you can drop by and see him in retirement. You know what I mean? But I like that they're keeping the idea of there being a doctor who's sort of Pike's confidant.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of going back to M'Benga and sort of fleshing out that character. That was one character, I mean... Bronk, are you familiar with M'Benga at all?
No.
He appeared in two episodes of the original series. And like Keith said, he had interned on Vulcan, so he was more of a specialist in Vulcan physiology. More so than McCoy always seemed surprised. And, you know, McCoy had no idea what was going on in Spock's body. But so M'Benga might be a good contrast to McCoy as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, McCoy would always make a comment about how everything was in the wrong place.
Right. Like, oh, you have extra eyelids?
Yeah, right.
Aren't your heart's in the wrong
place. Yeah, and M'Benga was most, he was, it was great because he was in that famous episode with the killer gorilla with the poison bite.
Yeah, A Private Little War.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, what a great episode.
And what was the other one? That Which Survives? Is that the other one he was in? With Lee Merriweather?
Yeah, that Which Survives. That's the episode.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, a character who, it's attention catching. You'd notice him. You remember him from the show, but he never really got the time in the spotlight, right. You know? So I think that'd be an interesting choice to bring him in.
Agreed.
Okay. Moving along. And I have this character paired up with Christina Chong, but it's Laan. That's LA apostrophe AN.
Yep.
In her late 20s, early 30s, she's the head of security a badass physical and suffers from PTSD. She has an air of vigilance and precision. They specifically like someone who is East Indian, Asian, or Middle Eastern, but open to any ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
And now Christina Chong is from England, but of Asian descent.
Yeah.
And in that right age, I'm not sure exactly how old she is, but she's right around that late 20s, early 30s age range. I think that would match up pretty well.
Mm-hmm. It seems to. Yeah, definitely.
Now, La'an is not an Earth name that I'm familiar with.
You know, the only close name I know to La'an is Da'an.
Exactly what Earth I was going to say.
Earth Final Conflict, okay. Yeah.
From Earth Final Conflict,
oh.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
That's interesting. Yeah,
that almost sounds like, and that sounds like a throwback to a Gene Roddenberry name, like Da'an, La'an. And do you remember, was it Earth 2, Lyra Ah, the lady with the two navels? And that, do you ever see that one?
Yeah.
Oh, sounds like a Roddenberry thing, La'an.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting if they're going back to old Roddenberry documents and pulling ideas for this.
Wouldn't that be cool? I think
that would be
such an amazing thing to do.
Yeah. All right. So moving to this one, who I have paired up with Celia Rose Gooding. I think this is also a coded name, but the name they have is Yaboah. She's Black, in her early 20s and fresh out of the academy. She's a linguistics genius, bright, promising, and the youngest member of the crew. And she can sound American or have any other accent. So, the first thing I saw was Black, early 20s, fresh out of the academy, linguistics genius. That immediately put Uhura to my mind.
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to have to let this go, it sounds like. But Uhura was not a linguist on the original series. That's right. A retcon.
Exactly. Exactly.
She was an engineer and a radio operator. But okay. But she was a linguist in the JJ universe.
Yeah.
So what would we think about them taking another stab at young Uhura?
I mean, it seems like it's a possibility.
I think it would make a lot of sense. My preference would be that the only character from Kirk's Enterprise to serve with Pike would be Spock, because I think the menagerie makes more sense. No one else seemed to care that Pike was on board, you know?
Exactly.
But I mean, they weren't, for one, when they made the menagerie, they weren't trying to build the bedrock of a 50-year franchise. They were just making the episodes.
Right.
But Uhura is a character who is just an absolutely iconic pop culture character, but she still to this day has never really gotten her due.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it was, 40 plus years after the character was introduced that she got a first name in 2009 on screen.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Then they made her much more prominent in the JJ movies. But I felt like saddling her with being Spock's girlfriend most of the time.
Yeah, I hate it.
Sort of undercut.
Yeah, I hated that plot development. I don't even understand that plot development, but I agree with you completely. I think they kind of, then they started having lover squabbles and stuff like that. I wasn't very interested in it.
During missions into Klingon.
Yeah. I mean, her greatest stuff was, I hate to say it, was in the animated series. And,
Without a doubt. I mean, they actually did interesting things with Uhura in the animated show.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave her a lot more screen time. They gave her more involvement in storylines. Yeah. And not to mention taking command of the ship twice.
Right. That's right.
So, I would be happy if they actually did Uhura in the show and took her more in that direction.
Yeah, and I think I would love to see more. Now, I don't want to necessarily be Spock's girlfriend, but I would love to see more of that early TOS Spock Uhura relationship, like you got in The Man Trap and Charlie X,
mm-hmm.
when they do have a little flirtation, but they just have a more interesting dynamic that sort of disappeared as the show went on, or at least went way into the background.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that would be kind of funny though. Yeah, when she asked me if I've been in love, and on the moon talks about the moonlit night, and then he does the Vulcan has no moon. It's Uhura.
I'm not surprised.
Chemistry, yeah, and then she pisses her off 2 seconds later.
I'm hearing all these, as you're talking about all these characters from the original series, I'm hearing all these lines that Chuck has written for our various Star Trek puppet shows, and I'm like,
yes,
so that's where it comes from, huh?
Yeah, I rip off Star Trek a lot.
That's funny.
Shocking.
now Celia Rose Gooding, if she's playing Uhura, now she's a musical theater Grammy and Tony Award.
Point.
You know what I mean? So I guess it's possible we could get some Uhura singing in the rec room.
That's true. That's very possible.
You mean Charlie's Our New Dolly and all that stuff?
Bring back Beyond Antares.
Yeah.
All right. But if we have that, then we also have to have some scene of her learning and practicing the fan dance. I'm sorry, but it has to happen.
Well, we saw on Lower Decks that that's standard Starfleet protocol.
But you have to learn it and sort of practice it at some point. And that's true.
That's true.
I'd be interested. And this is one of these things I think where I never say never. I'm kind of like Charles. I don't really want to see she's a great character. For some reason, I don't know if I want to see a throwback to her in the series, but it's nothing at all would bother me. I mean, I'm sure they'd do something great with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really kind of think that they're actually going a different direction and it's going to be a new and original and unique character, but
could be
the similarities are so close.
Yeah. I mean, so far, I mean, everyone we've talked about these, you know, there's an actor that lines right up with this character description.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also with Uhura, I mean, you got sort of vague ideas about her background, but I think there's a lot of room now, particularly with things like Afrofuturism being much more mainstream now.
Yeah.
Where you could delve into where she comes from, her family, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You could make her much more technologically advanced because given Africa and how it lays across the equator and stuff like that, Africa would be a great place for a spaceport, for example.
So, sure, yeah.
And have all kinds of stuff going on
there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving along, the next one, which I have paired up with Jess Bush, is Miller. They call her in her late 20s, early 30s, Caucasian, heroic, charming, free thinking, and the beating heart of sick bay. I think they also said this was a nurse, but I think I accidentally cut that part off.
I think they're right. I do remember seeing that.
Yeah. This seemed like a kind of odd to me that you would list a nurse as a main character.
I agree.
And then specifically call out for her being Caucasian because you already have three Caucasians in the leads. So I was wondering if this would also be a coded name for an existing TOS character.
I'm wondering that too.
Now that they've cast this blonde actor.
I hope that it's not.
You mean in Chapel?
Talking about Chapel.
Huh. Yeah, right? Yeah. One is fine. Two is a stretch. I would not want a third.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there.
Well, a fourth counting Spock.
Now, I will say though, I think there's some, assuming you're not already loading up the show with TOS characters. Yeah. There's room definitely to develop Chapel, you know, with her, you know, having left her career behind to search for her fiance lost in space.
Yeah.
Roger Corby.
And yeah, exactly. Now, what was Chapel? She was like before she was a nurse, she was like a expert in whatever field, does anybody remember specifically?
No, now she mentioned, I don't remember. I should.
But you know what I'm talking about. She was, you know, anyway, she was a scientist essentially, and then she joined up as a nurse because Roger Corby disappeared. Now we know that they couldn't find him on Strange New Worlds because they found him on Star Trek already.
Oh, good point.
But but they could also do more with her beyond having a crush on Spock all the time.
They'd have to completely rewrite that. They would really have to completely rewrite that whole crush, unquitted crush.
Or would they? They could have her and Uhura just like, you know, catfighting.
Oh my gosh.
Keep him away from the writer's room.
Yeah.
But
sorry, I'm in total CW.
Hey, we don't know what the tone of the show is going to be. You might be right on.
Charles, if you're a CW vote, if they're over 25, they're too old for this, Earl.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, they'd be playing high schoolers if they're over 25.
And they all do look kind of young for their age.
Yeah. Now, it occurred to me, too, though, if this was Chapel, you would have Chapel and Number One, both part of the cast, both played originally by Majel Barrett.
Oh, that would be interesting.
So I thought that might be another reason they may want to bring that character in, was sort of honoring Majel Barrett. But like I said, we're stressing, this is all speculation at this point. We're just having fun.
Hey, you know, sorry, real quick, it could be something like Voyager. Spoilers for anybody who hadn't seen Voyager. It could be something where she came in as a nurse and the doctor bites it in the first episode. Because you remember there was a doctor and there was a doctor and I think the navigator in Voyager died in the first episode. So maybe she comes in as a nurse and she takes over as the doctor.
That could be. So the last character we have listed here is Ortegas. She's in her late 20s, Latinx, and an experienced vet. She has kept a dry wit, even with the combat she's seen. She's smart, funny, competitive, and is able to pivot from handling a gun to making a joke. And who I have that character paired up with? Melissa Navia.
Melissa Navia.
Yeah. Originally from Colombia and also a comedian.
Okay, well, that fits, man.
Yeah, this seems like, I mean, like I said, every one of these, it seems like it fits pretty well with who was cast. Your name Ortega's jumped out at me. If you remember Jose Tyler from The Cage in the original documents for the original outline for Star Trek was Jose Ortega. So I thought that was interesting that they might that they could pull a name that didn't get used from the original Star Trek premise.
Interesting.
You reach deep for that one.
Well, really the making of Star Trek.
Wow.
But interesting, though. Now, like I said, stressing this is all speculation. All we have so far is the actual actors and no character names. So they could all be Vulcans for all we know. But
yeah. Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting how well they lined up with these. And
they really do. And so it seems like whoever put out that cast call sheet or whatever really has, you know, solid information.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
So it's going to be interesting to see how it develops. I was looking at IMDb and I realized that Melissa Navia had recently done an episode of New Amsterdam, the medic show that Freema Agyeman is on.
Oh, really?
Yes. I love that show. Now I'm wondering if I've seen her and not realized it.
Well, I bet there's a lot of these actors that we've seen and not realized. Yeah. I mean, I've watched Black Mirror, so I've seen at least two of them who were in Black Mirror, although they didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't know it at the time.
Well, I'm pretty sure we haven't seen Celia Rose Gooding.
True. True.
Since Star Trek is her first film thing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That was good.
All right. So another piece of news that we had, they've recently announced that the Nacelle Company is doing an 8-part Star Trek docu-series for History Channel.
I was so excited about that when I saw that.
Yeah, me too. They're the Toys That Made Us type of shows are really pretty good, and it tickles me that I mean they named their production company the Nacelle Company from the jump. So this people who are interested in Star Trek.
Yeah, it's interesting that you know if you think back to the 50th anniversary, nothing happened for the 50th anniversary, and so
there was a movie.
Okay, fine. But nothing celebratory. I mean, that one had aspects to it. So I'm really excited that this whole sort of Trek resurgence that's come along with the advent of CBS All Access and these new shows, that there's all this periphery kind of stuff that's popping up as well. And I'm so excited to see the nonfiction world of Star Trek fleshing out this way, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I still want an Adventure Space and Time for Star Trek. I want to see people playing the actors in the 60s.
Absolutely. For anybody who doesn't know what that is, that was a docudrama depicting how Doctor Who originated. So to see an actor portray Gene Roddenberry and these other people conceiving Star Trek and getting it into production would love that. That'd be amazing.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah,
there's room there. That'd be a really good idea, especially when the first pilot didn't work and they had to do a second one and what they were thinking and the network people going, do we do this? I mean, that could be fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to hear the musical sting when William Shatner comes into the casting room.
That's a very, very good point you make, because then you go back to the whole thing about Jeffrey Hunter's wife evidently talking him out of sticking with Star Trek. You know what? That could be one of those legendary things that happened, and what could have been different. You know, who knows? Maybe he would have lived. I assume he would have lived longer if he had been with Star Trek. So that could be very interesting, because you're right. Alan, I like that Doctor Who, and I'm not a huge Doctor Who aficionado, but I really enjoyed that show. Mm-hmm. That's very well done.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, it really was, and it was accessible. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm pretty excited to see an 8-part docuseries on Star Trek. Anyway, you know, it's supposed to cover from the beginning up to I don't know how many decades it said, but you know, over the course of the years, with interviews and so forth, which I have to expect they're going to get up to present day stuff, because they've got access to all these people to talk about it. Right. You know,
exactly.
And is all this, even something like this documentary, is all this fueled by the success of Discovery and Picard? Is that the thing that's rekindled all this? You think this would have happened even if those series hadn't been popular now?
I think that the success of these new shows is what's, you know, pushing this forward. Yeah. Because there's been decades of, mm-hmm. you know, for them to do this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think there's any mystery behind why it's happening now.
Yeah. There's certainly more buzz about Star Trek and
and
industry interest in Star Trek now than there was, you know, 5 years ago.
Right. Exactly.
Now that there's 27 Star Trek shows.
And then we got some of the real life stuff like the SpaceX launches, which, I mean, those have been pretty cool. And then the ones that blow up are actually pretty cool too. So that keeps people watching.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, then we're going to take a quick break to hear a commercial or two from our fellow ESO Network podcast shows, and then we'll be back with our discussion topic.
The 42 cast is turning 100, but like all good things, it must come to an end. Tune in to our epic finale as we see who lives, who dies, and who gets their own spinoff. And then come back when the 42 cast is back for season 2 with even more segments, more guests, and more of explaining why Ryan is wrong. It's why we're still the ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. You can only find all this awesome by downloading the 42 cast, a proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back. Our discussion topic this week. Don't laugh at me, Keith.
That was cool.
Something that's been on my mind, I guess, really since Lower Decks brought back Landru. We're now in a world where anything from Star Trek can come back. So I thought it might be fun to sort of look back at some of the one-off planets, characters, races, technology, anything from Star Trek. I mean, if Landru can come back, anything's fair game.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
If you'd have told me 3 years ago that, you know, Ensign Gomez and the outrageous O'Connor were going to be coming back to Star Trek, I would have said you were crazy, but that's the world we live in now. So, I thought it might be fun. Did anybody want to kick it off with a one-off character that they think should come back and why, or did you want me to jump in?
Pell.
Well, I know. Yeah, go right ahead, Veronica. I know you've got some interesting ones, and I'm sure they're all Ferengi too.
Well, the first one is Ferengi. It's Pell. I'd really love to see her come back.
Tell people who Pell are if they don't remember.
So she was the female Ferengi that disguised herself as a male and tricked Cork and tricked Grand Nagus and got them a deal. And they're like, we're going to tell on you. And she was like, haha, no, you're not, because then you're screwed too. And they're like, oh, right. and then at the end, she just kind of like disappears and moves on. But she was a love interest for Quark that I thought was like an actual potential love interest. But at the same time, Quark's a Ferengi and Ferengi women are not like that, despite the fact that he doesn't seem to really like Ferengi women in general. And then in that same episode, the Dosai, that were like this weird mixture of the Orions and the Ferengi, it seemed like. Big red guys, yeah. That first introduced them to the Dominion. The Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those guys. They were really fierce.
Yeah, the white dots on the
face. Yeah, they were really fierce. Uh-huh. That right. famous actor, is it Brian Thompson, was the leader of them?
See that guy that played the Klingon in Star Trek Generations?
Yeah, he's the actor that's played everything. He was the killer in the Stallone movie, Cobra. He's that.
Yeah.
He was the Klingon that talked to Riker in The Next Generation. Riker was on the Klingon Exchange program. Yeah, he was the leader, because you can't miss that big guy everywhere.
Yeah, I think Pell would be a great pick. I think they should have brought her back on DS9. That she would have been a great ongoing foil / interest for Quark.
Absolutely. Wasted opportunity, as they say.
So Veronica, if they were to bring her back, what would you have liked to have seen for a storyline with her? Would you like them to have made her permanent, maybe her and Quark truly gotten together? Or is there just things you would like to have seen them resolve if she came back one more time?
I would like to see her as a regular character, it's been a while since I watched the end of DS9. I feel like the Ferengi culture was shifting a little bit there near the end.
It was shifting a lot.
I don't know how much Brunt pulled it back, but it was shifting for most of the Ferengi, and them realizing, hey, look, here's all these other people who can earn profit. Why are they not earning profit? So I thought it would be interesting to see her come back of, look, I've been earning profit as a man for years. What's your problem?
I'd like for her to show up on Lower Decks as Grand Nagus Pell.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good idea.
Because, you know, I mean, Rom was the Grand Nagus as when the show ended. But, you know, the Empire would have been swindled out from under him within the week.
Yes.
Unless, yeah, you need Quark and Rom's mother to really help him run the Empire.
Or that's right. Grand Nagus Moogie.
The there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good pick, Veronica.
Yeah, I like that.
Who wants to go next? Who's chomping at the bit?
Well, Keith has a longer list. Why don't you do it?
I have this is actually hard. Like I was telling Charles, we could do two episodes on this and keep going because it's such a common thing to say. And one of them that I thought of just for a different reason, it's an incredibly well-known race, is the Children of Tama from the famous episode Darmok. And I doubt anybody listening to this doesn't know Darmok, but that's the famous episode where they meet the race of people who speak in metaphor. And the captain of the other ship beams Picard down to the planet Eladril. And there they encounter a monster. And the point of the whole show was the metaphor that the Tamarians speak is so obtuse or so abstract that nobody's ever been able to understand it. And basically by them fighting a battle together, Picard learns to understand the language. And the reason, there's a couple of reasons I'd like to see that race again. One, they were just a really fascinating race. I don't know if the evolution of a people to speak in metaphor really makes sense. It's kind of like everybody says, if you can say Picard and Dathan on Eladril, then you have to have these questions like, what happened to the word island? And, you know, what happened to all these definitions? So I'd like to dig a little bit more deeply into them. But one of the other reasons I thought is that they were truly alien with how they spoke and to a certain extent how they looked. But one of the things that always fascinated about that race, if you ever think about it, if you look at Star Trek, when they encounter other races, it's pretty much technologically the race is really far behind the Federation, like some primitive cultures, or they're very, very far advanced, like the the Metrons or any other race or the Commander Baylock with the First Federation.
Yep.
And then they're pretty much on the exact same level, the Klingons and the Ferengi. But one of the things every time I watch that episode that always strikes me is at the end when they have that battle, when Riker orders them to attack the Tamarian ship, within a couple of minutes, Data says, we can't survive another hit from these people. I mean, they took their shields down and then Riker says, back away from them. And they've taken their engines out. And within just a couple minute battle, they had defeated the flagship of the Federation. And they're not a superpower, but they're obviously powerful. And I just always like to see a race that has maybe powers and abilities that the Federation doesn't have. I'd just like to see how they would fit into that world. It's just very fascinating, maybe what kind of technology they have. One of the other things I always like about them is Star Trek, of course, is mostly told from the point of view of humans. And the whole point is, as Gene Roddenberry talked about, is we want to carry our quote-unquote humanity out into space. And so much of Star Trek is about teaching people like Spock, you know, Vulcans, it's okay to be human. Teaching Worf, it's okay not just be a fierce Klingon, but to understand your humanity. You know, in the movies, they even make a joke about how you guys talk about your humanity. And one of the things I find so fascinating about this show is the lesson about being a good people doesn't come from the Federation. It comes from the Tamarian captain in this show. And that's kind of a reversal that you often don't see. Picard at the end of the episode was telling Riker when he's back on the ship and he's reading his book. And Riker asks him, Picard's reading Greek. And he says, it might help us to understand some of our own, you know, culture. And he says, the Tamarian captain was willing to risk everything just for the chance to say hello. And I've always found that was an incredibly powerful show. That man gave his life, just as Picard said, to say hello. And his crew was dedicated to him giving his life. They were all going to destroy the Enterprise so that their captain could complete his mission. And his mission was to just reach out and say hello. And I just found that so just powerful, because it's so rare that another race is the one who is the thing. That was a lesson. They were the ones who reached out their hand to us and said, look, we want to get to know you. And I also thought it was the other thing I really like to see the show is when Picard was first being aboard and he was talking to the people. Riker says, new friends, Captain. And he says, I'm not sure, but not new enemies. And to me, that just leaves the door open for what I think could be a really rich and fascinating race. And I would just really have loved to see those people again.
Yeah, I had the Tamarians as well, but I didn't have such deep thoughts as you. I thought it'd be fun if the Tamarians come back on Lower Decks. There's one in Starfleet who speaks only in Star Trek references.
That could be a wild one too, right?
Because so much of that show is already just Star Trek references. Yeah. I think a Tamarian Starfleet officer ensign would fit right in.
You saying that, Charles, reminds me of a character on that Transformers movie that only spoke in TV commercial. So, yeah. But that's actually one of my favorite. It's one of my, like most people, it's easily in my top 5 or 10 Star Trek episodes. I'd love to see them come back again.
I also really enjoyed the photonic life forms in Voyager.
Yes.
Because they were like, it was a non-humanoid. I mean, they made themselves look humanoid because, you know, costumes. But it was a non-humanoid, non-carbon-based life form, which was really, really interesting. And you like had that little bit of them in there and then just nothing ever again.
Particularly if they only have to show up in holodecks.
Yeah.
And you have just whatever holodeck situation you have is they're just showing up as either guys in fedoras or guys in togas or whatever the case may be. You never know when a holodeck character will just turn around and be a photonic life form from Dimension X.
Mm-hmm. Dimension. Yeah,
interesting. That's an interesting call because I was to your point. They could make them have very interesting abilities. Like they could interface with the computer in a way that an organic being couldn't. They could tap into the ship's systems and wield energies that a regular organic being couldn't because they're not corporeal.
Or they could look in from the outside and say, no, you're keeping these holodeck characters as slaves.
Yeah.
We have to help them strike back. Yeah. Photons be free.
Oh, yeah.
Rock out with your photons out.
That's a good call.
All right, Charles, I know you've got a long list too. So
I do. I could just really just go naming all Star Trek characters. One that I think is a shoe-in, I think, I wouldn't have said this before, but now I would say it's guaranteed to come back, is the Horda. They've got to bring back the Horda, on Lower Decks at least.
I was thinking about that. I almost put that on my list too.
I mean, we already had Landru. We had the Gorn show up with actual look like Gorn. We've had the Salt Vampire made a cameo. I mean, they're not going to get through Lower Decks and not have a Horda show up. Warp speed slugs.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were in the same episode. What are they called? That's what I call them. Warp speed slugs.
Talking about when you go to warp 13 or warp 10 and turn into a salamander.
Yes.
I thought you were talking about. I didn't know what you're talking about.
Okay, sorry. Warp 13 salamander.
Right
there, you
warp
go.
13 salamander. Yeah, that works. Like I said,
yeah. It's warp 10, but there's no way they're going to make it through Lower Decks without a Horda showing up at some point. I'm calling that now. I think we're guaranteed to see the Horda again.
Season 2, we're going to get a Horda.
Well, you guys, that's a very interesting pick because they could even, if they want to do it jokingly, remember the given that the Horda was silicon-based life, it couldn't exist in an oxygen atmosphere, but for a few moments. So that could call for some interesting memory because that was the thing. She was in the tunnels, but Spock speculated because what she was made of, she could only exist in an oxygen atmosphere because I guess it would start basically bonding with her. She'd probably start burning or something like that. So that could be an interesting thing if that Horta on the ship can only exist in, I don't know, a vacuum or some kind of gaseous atmosphere, can only come out and talk to people for a minute before having to run off.
Or if it just walks through the hallway court, like the bulkheads. Yeah. Just instead of going through the
door. So you see all these holes all over the place?
Yeah. So the Lower Decks are having to go around and fix all the Horda holes.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, what do you have, Alan?
Okay. I'm going to start with one that doesn't really fit in with our topic.
Okay.
Because it's not a one-off.
Sure.
In any way. But it's Betazoids. Okay. And there's two reasons for that. One, I would like to see how they have developed 1,000 years into the future. Mm-hmm. I want to know what their relationship is with the Federation. I want to see if when the Federation starts to piece it back, itself back together, where they're going to stand with that. And I think that they, you know, they have a unique set of abilities that I think could be used in a certain way with this new forming Federation. So I'm really interested to see where they are down the road. But I would also really like to see sort of a first contact story in Strange New Worlds.
Oh, yeah.
We don't really know the Betazoids' history with the Federation and really much of their own history of their own besides the Federation. So I would really like to see at least, you know, maybe an episode. You know,
were there any Betazoid references in Enterprise or Discovery?
None.
Okay, yeah, so
none that I know.
So we don't have any history on the Betazoids before.
Yeah.
Okay.
TNG. So they're not a one-off. They're a one series off.
Right. So Alan, a question I have about that point is, either as you said in the past with First Contact or in the far future, would you ever see the Betazoids as being a dangerous or even malevolent race because of their powers? Because they can read minds pretty easily of a whole bunch of species. And when you have races like the Talosians, who are way more powerful, that's a problem. Uh-huh. And I think about shows like B5, where telepaths on Earth were pretty much enslaved because people were afraid of their power. And there's been episodes of Next Generation, like I think it was an episode where Riker was, they were joking, or Picard, somebody was joking about having a Betazoid for a teacher or something. And they joke like you couldn't make an excuse because they knew you were lying before you opened your mouth. And I'm like, that would kind of make me nervous to be around a full telepath all the time.
Well, Riker married one, not a full telepath, but enough.
Right.
I don't need a wife to tell when I'm lying.
They could be a dangerous race with that power because they're very, very powerful telepaths.
Yeah, they can be. And we've seen how it can go to an extreme in the episode 10.
Right.
Yeah.
We've seen, the limitations that you have when you're not a pure Betazoid. Right. So I think it would be interesting to see. I would really like to know a lot more about how that race developed. Yeah.
Like you say, it would be fun just to see the first contact, because you're talking about a race that they're very open, not only with their thoughts, but also with just themselves just walking around naked. You know, that could be a culture shock for humans showing up.
Yeah, the first thing that our crew sees when they arrive on Beta Z is a wedding.
Yeah, and they can, and all the guests can hear what you're thinking.
And if the Betazoids ever turn bad or evil, Veronica, do you know who's proof against the Betazoids? Do you remember that?
The Ferengi, yes. And there was another
Iridium.
Wouldn't it be wild if the Ferengi had to go up against the Betazoids because they can't read their minds?
That would be awesome. Discovery season 4, the Betazoid Ferengi War.
Yes.
Oh, now we're talking.
You joke, but that actually sounds kind of cool.
It sounds amazing.
I would read that novel series
in a heartbeat.
Well, we're about 5 minutes out. Who has one they just can't let this episode end without mentioning?
Okay, I've got one that I didn't really have any kind of deep explanation for.
Okay.
So I'll just throw that one out. Since we have Andorians in Discovery, I really would like to see some Enar.
Yeah.
And who are the Enar?
The Enar was the sub-race of
I got you.
From Enterprise.
Yeah, they were blind and telepathic, right? Yeah.
So maybe we could have an Enar and Betazoid war.
Well, you could do a whole telepath war then.
Exactly. Yeah.
You got the Talosians, the Betazoids, the Enar, the Vulcans, who are kind of sort of telepathic, kind of sort of. Some people say they're not true telepaths.
All right. So I'm going to save all my other ones for when we do this topic again.
Well, I've got a quick one I can throw out.
Excellent.
Vol and the people, the children of Vol.
Oh, my God.
I want to see the return of, we already saw Landru bring back Vol. I want to see how those red people with white hair, if they ever figured out how babies.
You want to see, you want to see David Soul, right?
Cause Kirk's sex education was keep kissing. You'll figure it out. Right,
you want to see David Soul from Starsky and Hutch come back.
Yeah. I have his album. Oh, okay. So I may as well see him back on Star Trek.
My real quick one requires no detail is Kevin Uxbridge from the Survivors.
Okay. Oh, that's a good idea.
Because that guy is ridiculously powerful. And I would like to know, what's his story? How powerful is he? Is he Q-level powerful? Is he part of a species, last of his kind? I would really like to see. And what did he do after he, you know, is he still dancing with the ghost of his wife on that planet? Mm.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know if I'd want him without John Anderson to play him, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. He was so iconic, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. One more really quick. Q2.
Excellent. Yeah.
Q2.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not Q1 though.
No, not well, I mean, absolutely Q1 as well, but he's not a one-off. Q2 is a one-off.
True. And if he has a kid in real life, Q3.
Yes.
Right.
Because there's no way they're not all actors and hilarious.
Exactly.
All right. Did you have a last one?
No, that was it for me. Because like you said, we can save this for another one. Because man, we could go forever.
Yeah, we definitely have to circle back around and do a part two.
Sorry, you said something funny, Charles. You can do almost every episode. I think you said like you just watch an episode and go, "Hey, what happened?
What about these guys?" Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the Star Trek universe. You've got such a wealth of, like they did with the Pakleds. I mean, there's so many characters you can bring back and do something better with and or more with. You know. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if people want to hear more of your thoughts, Alan, where can they find you on the internet?
Oh, I am all over the place. I just started a new YouTube show called Alan's Music. It's either going to be Alan's Music Room or Alan's Music Party. I keep going back and forth on it, but I did my first episode a couple nights ago reviewing the Grammy Awards. And so it's going to be Sunday nights. And going to be sort of an interview show where I and my interview subject will each pull 5 random albums from our collection and talk about them. Other than that, I'm an author and I've got a lot of stuff at cosmicpress.com, cosmicpress.com.
And how about you, Keith?
You can find me on all the ESL Network Facebook channels. I also have Instagram and Twitter, but primarily Facebook for me and primarily ESL Network.
And how about us, Veronica?
Feltnerdy.com, which redirects to our Facebook page.
Yep, and we're starting to do some filming and stuff. So hopefully we'll be able to get some stuff online soon. And once everybody's vaccinated, hopefully we'll be back at conventions. So if you're listening to this in the future and conventions are back, look for us at a convention near you.
Thank you for listening to Earth Station Trek. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating. You can also send us feedback at earthstationtrek@gmail.com. You can join in the fun on our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. You can also visit us online at earthstationtrek.podbean.com. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.